From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Joe Shaneman. It's State of Nevada. The national opioid epidemic has been in full swing for years now, and Nevada is too familiar with it. The rate of opioid deaths in Nevada in 2021 was nearly 22 times higher than 2013, and recent reports say that last year, Nevada had the second highest overdose rate increase in the country. But moves are afoot to change that, helped in large part by settlements with pharmaceutical companies responsible for making those opioid drugs that had addicted so many and had led to thousands of deaths in this country. And I'm going to start with Melanie Rouse. She is the Clark County coroner and also the chair of the Clark County Regional Opioid Task Force. Melanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. So opioids, we're going to do a little groundwork here first. These are drugs prescribed for persistent or severe pain. Oxycodone is one of them. What is it about them that makes them so addictive?
So in addition to the prescription drugs, there is also illicit variants, specifically fentanyl, which is a synthetic opioid that is highly potent.
Okay. And what makes it so, I mean, maybe you don't know the medical reasons for becoming so addictive, but I wonder how people are getting these opioids. It is a street drug. There are, like, fentanyl, you can get that on the street, but are most of these prescribed by doctors?
I would say a lot of what we're seeing now is illicit substances. They have adulterated other drugs as well. So you also have opioids that include things like heroin, opium, codeine, methadone, morphine. There is a long list of different opioids, but much of what we're seeing, about 50% of our drug-related deaths, are now seeing fentanyl in them.
You know, as the county coroner, you and your investigators do see the tragic outcomes of overdoses. And I have been with coroner investigators actually at the home where a mom did die of an overdose. And I still remember when I was there, a family member saying, "We knew this was going to happen. We saw it coming." Is that something you hear often, or do your investigators hear that? Is this something that is slowly coming on with people, or do you see quick deaths from this? I mean, talk a little bit about what your investigators and yourself are seeing out there.
I would say the biggest transition that we've noticed is that initially when we started seeing fentanyl in our cases, it was an unknown substance, meaning that people weren't necessarily aware that they were getting fentanyl. I'd say one of the biggest shifts that we're now seeing is that people are actually seeking it. So it has now become their drug of choice.
Do you find this, is there a specific demographic with this? Do you find this in lower income places, higher income? Talk a little bit about that.
So that is part of the focus of the task force, is to evaluate things like trends related to zip codes, to look at social determinants of health, and also to look at other conditions that contribute to it. But I would say that we are seeing this widespread from people that are very, very young to people that are even elderly, with the biggest focus group being in the mid-20s to mid-30 range, but we see it across all ages.
And the Southern Nevada Health District has reported 1,412 opioid-related deaths in the county over four and a half years, from January 2018 to July 2022. That's about 313 a year. Is that what you're seeing now, or are the numbers going up, going down? Give me a general sense of that.
I would say we're seeing a significant increase. Since the task force was put into place, we were tasked with looking at opiate-related deaths beginning in October 1st of 2023. Mm-hmm. From October 1st of 2023 to mid-March of this year, we have already seen over 230 opiate-related deaths.
Wow. That's astounding. Okay, so you're the chair of the Clark County's Opioid Task Force. This is a 15-member board appointed by the Clark County Commission to study this crisis and potential solutions. So talk a little bit more about what the task force does and what it wants to do.
So the task force is reviewing information, monitoring and overseeing different drug-related fatalities. We're looking at things like demographics. We're looking at the substances used, the combination of those substances, looking at the locations of incident of where the drugs were consumed, and looking at their cause and manner of death, and also understanding a bit about the history and the description of the information from the incident. After we have completed these reviews and this gathering of data and information, we will then produce a report about possible suggestions to the community on ways that we can have public health intervention to ensure the safety of our communities.
Clark County is also hoping to have an opioid treatment center up and running within 2 years. Is that part of your discussion? So maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
So our task force is actually not responsible for determining how the funding will be used from the opiate settlement. Our task force is tasked with making suggestions regarding what characteristics and risk factors place people at risk of this. We are tasked with looking at different domains of health and making suggestions from the information that we've reviewed for the future.
Clark County Coroner Melanie Rouse, who is also the chair of the Clark County Regional Opioid Task Force. And now I want to introduce Chelsea Cheatham. She is the current deputy director of the PACT Coalition for Safe and Drug-Free Communities. She's also the former program manager for Track B, which was or is a needle exchange group in Southern Nevada. Chelsea, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. For starters, what does the PACT Coalition do?
So the PACT Coalition for Safe and Drug-Free Communities, it started in 2010. It's a substance use prevention coalition that serves Clark County. We're one of 10 coalitions in the state. So there's a coalition that serves every county in our state. And what we do is really focusing on being a convening table to bring people in our community together to talk about substance use, talk about prevention, talk about overdose, and figure out ways that we might be able to help the community to alleviate some of those problems. Mm-hmm. Also, we fund a lot of programs within our community. We receive grant funding and we're able to give that funding to other organizations that are working primarily with youth to incorporate evidence-based programs and alternative activities, you know, positive activities where there's no substance use. So that we can make sure that youth have positive things to do and are learning about how to say no to substances, how to increase those self-esteem and refusal skills. And then also we work to change policies and systems within our community to really target the root causes of substance use.
And one of your goals at the coalition is education on opioids. How do you do that?
So we do that in a multitude of ways. And I think we want to make sure that we're providing universal education. So providing education on preventing opioid use, but that's usually, you know, also preventing use of other substances as well. So alcohol, tobacco, vaping, et cetera. So evidence-based prevention is, you know, prevention that is evaluated, that has proven positive outcomes, that doesn't use scare tactics. So those are things that, you know, are going to really help youth to increase their self-esteem and to really form connectedness with community. And all of those things help reduce substance use risk and opioid use risk.
You know, public schools used to have something called the DARE program. A lot of schools don't do that anymore. And they worked with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department on that. At what age are you seeking to start educating kids about this?
So, you know, evidence-based programs typically can start as young as kindergarten, but we really want to encourage people to start talking about this at all ages. So, increasing those protective factors for youth. So increasing the parental disapproval of substance use, parents talking about not using drugs. Parental engagement is another factor that really helps with preventing substance use and opioid use, because we know opioid use is happening across our community and is happening as early as middle school in our community. And we know that the earlier people start using substances, start using drugs, it changes the brain and it can cause future addiction. So we want to make sure that education is happening at all ages.
And I asked this question of Melanie a few minutes ago, but from your standpoint, I wonder if you see as addiction to opioids as pretty equal across the age and economic spectrum of the Valley, or are you seeing it more in specific groups?
Similar to what Melanie said, I think, opioid use and opioid misuse, it's affecting every demographic across our state, across our communities. I know that there has been a marked increase in fentanyl use and fentanyl deaths, and also that in 2019, 2020, across the state, there was an increase in overdose deaths in people that were under the age of 18, as well as people in that age range of 18 to 24. So we know that it's affecting our young people. And then also there was an increase in deaths amongst Hispanics in that same time period. But we also want to just, always say that it's affecting every demographic. So it's important for people to look at prevention and to across like all demographics in our community.
I mean, excuse me, you're out there on the, at the front lines of this kind of thing. And Melanie talked about the fact that they're seeing more young people, getting involved in this, seeing overdoses with fentanyl and other opioids. Do you have, or does your group have a rationale for that? Do they know why that's happening?
I think a lot of it is just, going off of looking at people misuse opioids for various reasons. A lot of times they are getting prescribed opioids and people eventually just form an addiction and it's causing a dependency, so they want to keep using them. And also fentanyl right now is being found in lots of other non-opioid drugs. So it's being found in, methamphetamines and stimulants and cocaine and all of these other drugs that people may not know that they're in. So people are using opioids sometimes without even realizing that they're using them. And then also a lot of times people are using them with press pills. They think they're getting a pill and it's really a fake pill that's got some opioid in them. So I think, the rise in opioid use is for a multitude of reasons in our community.
I hear this jargony term harm reduction that it's playing a part in fighting opioid addiction. First of all, what does harm reduction mean to you when it comes to opioid addiction?
So harm reduction is something that I'm very passionate about. As you mentioned earlier, I had started the Track B Exchange harm reduction program with Rick Reich in our community in 2017. So harm reduction is just looking at strategies that people can use to reduce their risk of overdose, reduce their risk of injury from like a behavior that they're engaged in. So in this case, if they're using opioids, what we want to do is we want to make sure that people, if they're injecting, they're preventing HIV and hepatitis C, and they're also getting naloxone, which is that overdose reversing medication that can work to reverse an overdose rather quickly. So, a harm reduction center is committed to meeting people where they are in their use. So it's without judgment. People could be in active use, and they can come in and they can get the services that they need. So it really leads to a direct line of getting people the help that they need at the time, and then also talking to them about treatment options, about recovery options, and things like that.
How do you do that? How do you do this outreach? How do you meet people where they might be using or where they are?
So it's going out to find them. So, going out to do mobile outreach in the community and meeting people and talking to them, doing, syringe exchange with people, taking used syringes from them so that they don't end up on the street, giving people Narcan. I know that in 2023, there were actually over 200 overdoses that were reversed with Narcan that was given out by the harm reduction program, Track B Exchange, in our community, and those were reported. So that's, a really good sign that people are taking that Narcan and they're using it. And they're actually saving lives and reversing overdoses with it.
I earlier mentioned some changes that could be coming because of some of the settlement money from the pharmaceutical companies that created a lot of the opioids that led to a lot of abuse. One of them has to do with the possibility of allowing prescriptions for opioid-fighting treatments. Can you talk about that? Do you think that's going to be a big benefit?
Oh, I definitely think that would be a big benefit. I think, all of the options for care are going to help. Harm reduction, treatment, recovery, that's all part of a continuum of care for people. So we want to offer people all of the options because individuals may need different things, and we want to make sure that people are getting what they need in order to stay alive, stay healthy, and, eventually get into recovery.
Clark County also hopes to have an opioid treatment center up and running within 2 years. How much do you know about that? And how much help do you think that's going to bring?
So I have heard about that. I think anytime we open up a treatment center, it's a good thing for our community. We offer a lot of treatment here in the state of Nevada. We have lots of different options for people, whether it's outpatient treatment, inpatient treatment, residential. But offering another option, especially one that is so close to us in Clark County, would be a great option for people and would probably help people get into treatment and eventually get into recovery.
Listeners, you've probably heard over the years about the multi-billion dollar settlements with drug companies who make things like oxycodone and other opiates, as well as retailers who sell them. And you've probably heard about the rise of fentanyl on the streets and people overdosing. Nevada received a total of about $1.1 billion from those settlements. And now that money is being considered for several options to combat opioid addiction. The Nevada Division of Insurance might amend their coverage to include all FDA-approved drugs to combat opioid abuse. And Clark County is planning on opening an opioid treatment center in the next 2 years. And I'm here with Chelsea Cheatham. She's Deputy Director of the PACT Coalition for Safe and Drug-Free Communities. And Melanie Rouse, the Clark County Coroner and Chair of the Clark County Regional Opioid Task Force. That's an ad hoc group whose mission is going to end in December. At that time, they're going to come up with a lot of solutions and recommendations for Clark County to combat these overdoses that we're seeing throughout the Clark County. And Melanie, is the Clark County Task Force now working with law enforcement?
Yes, we do have a representative from law enforcement on our team. The team itself is made up of multiple different agencies and specialists, and together is how we are looking at this from an entire holistic perspective.
So it's not being seen. I just wonder, with the LV, the police department involved, do they look at it as more of a healthcare issue or more of a law enforcement issue?
I think it's a combination of both. I think you have to look at it from multiple perspectives, especially knowing that so many drugs in the community have now been adulterated and are not the substances in which people think they are getting. I think it has to come from both perspectives.
And Chelsea Cheatham, what about the police and the way they deal with overdoses and drug addiction today? How do you see it?
You know, I know that we've had police that have started carrying naloxone, and that's a great thing. So that because a lot of times they are going to be the first ones on the scene, and they're going to be able to help to reverse an overdose. With my work at Track the Exchange, we've had some really positive interactions with law enforcement coming and even meeting with our community advisory board, which was made up of clients who were actually in active use, and talking to them. So I think that there has been a lot of positive interaction with the police, you know, when it comes to, you know, working with people who are using opioids. And it seems that law enforcement is really on board with making sure that they are at the forefront of kind of fighting this opioid crisis as well.
Yeah, Chelsea. Melanie talked about the increase in cases just from October through part of this year already, well over about 200 people, 200 overdose deaths. Do you have any ideas, or do people in your organization talk about ideas about why there has been this growth in overdoses here?
You know, I think that we can just always look back at the fact that there is like an adulteration of what people are using. So if people don't know that they're using an opioid, if they don't know that what they are taking has fentanyl in it and it may be just a little bit too much for them, that could be a major reason for an increase in overdoses in our community. Also, we want to just make sure that we're getting naloxone out and it's getting saturated in our community. We want to make sure that we're talking to people about the fact that everybody should carry naloxone. And that's always one of our messages. Everybody should carry it, because you never really know when you're going to come across an overdose, or someone that you know is going to overdose. And you want to make sure that's in the hands of people who are most likely to use it and who are able to be on scene first when an overdose happens.
Do you actually hear cases of people using it? I mean, has it been useful in combating these overdoses here? A lot of people in our office, for instance, are trained to use it. Nobody here has ever had to use it. But I wonder if you hear cases of people who have it that have, you know, just out in the public have had to use it.
Yes, actually, I've had to use it myself out in the public. I came across someone who was overdosing, and I was able to provide them with five doses of Narcan. It took five doses for them
Wow.
to come to and to start breathing. You know, we called EMS and we had EMS on the way, so they were able to hopefully provide additional Narcan doses when the person was being transported to the hospital. But yes, it does happen. We've heard it. We've heard of people overdosing in many settings in our community. And you know, the fact that Narcan is pretty readily available. It's available, you know, at pharmacies. It's available for free at the harm reduction centers, at PACT Coalition, at lots of agencies, including the Southern Nevada Health District. It's, you know, it's something that everybody should carry. And yes, we have heard of people having to use it and having to save lives with it.
Now, you're entrenched in this, so you're used to the idea of this. I wonder when you saw this happening, if it was something automatic with you. I wonder what it was like for you to actually be there and actually be at a point where you had to do something.
It was scary. And
Yeah.
it is surprising that even though I'm someone who is trained in how to use naloxone and I've trained many other people on how to use it, it is something that when you're in the moment and you're trying to help someone and you're trying to save their life, you get nervous and you get flustered. But naloxone is so easy to use. It is foolproof. It really is just a nasal spray that you're going to spray in someone's nose. So you don't really need to worry. If you're ever in a situation where you have to use it, you will be able to figure out how to use it. And it's definitely something that's worthwhile because when you know that someone's alive because you were able to provide them with this, and then you're able to hopefully help them with treatment and getting into recovery later, that's always a great feeling and a great thing.
We have talked many, many times in this program about our medical infrastructure in Las Vegas, how it is overburdened. We don't have enough doctors. We don't have enough medical personnel in all sorts of different areas, especially in specialties. Do you think we have enough? Are we well equipped enough to handle these overdose increases? What are you seeing when you see these things happening and you talk and you see how the medical community responds?
You know, I think in Nevada, we've been really innovative. So we have some really innovative programs that were happening in our emergency rooms where we're placing peer recovery support specialists or people who have lived experience with substance use and are in long-term recovery into emergency departments so that when someone is there after they've been medically stabilized for an overdose, they have someone who has experience that can talk to them and help navigate them into treatment. And I think, we are using peers in lots of settings now. We also have peer recovery support specialists through PACT Coalition that are even working in our specialty court programs in the drug courts as well, to help navigate people into treatment. So, I do think that an increase in overdoses could be a burden to our medical system, but we've got a great workforce of people with lived experience that really want to help with this issue. And I think that we could utilize them a lot more in many other settings to, help navigate people into treatment, teach them about overdose prevention, and provide them with harm reduction services.
And there doesn't seem to be a lot of reticence about helping. I mean, we have harm reduction vending machines in Clark County, and we've talked about that on this program. We're one of the first counties in the country to have this. But what do people need to do to access some of these overdose reversal drugs or clean needles at one of these machines?
Yes, so it's actually very simple. So there is an online sign-up system, and there is also a way to sign up if you go to the harm reduction center. So I will give the website for the harm reduction center. It is harmreductioncenterlv.com, and that is the website for Track B Exchange. If you go there, you'll find all the information you need to sign up. It is very anonymous, so we don't get full first name or full last name from anybody. But once you are or signed up to use the machine, you're going to get a code that you can use at the machine, and you can use them at any one of the six machines that are here in Las Vegas, any of the nine machines total that are in our state, and you would be able to get access to all the harm reduction supplies, including naloxone, but also fentanyl test strips, which is a key thing for people who may need to test whatever they're using to see if it has fentanyl in it. And hopefully if people are testing and they know that fentanyl is there, they're gonna not use, or they're going to use a little more carefully so that they can reduce their risk of overdose.
And we will have a link to the Harm Reduction Center, LV.com, on our website, knpr.org. That's all the time we have for today. I really want to thank my guests, Clark County Coroner Melanie Rouse and Chelsea Cheatham, Executive Director of the PACT Coalition.